Thank you. And thank you for organizers for the invitation. Sorry I had to arrive late. Actually, I'm going to be giving two talks. The two talks are two separate talks, but they're connected in that they're both motivated by discrete models, and what we can prove in the continuum, or what we like to describe in the continuum, is motivated by the discrete model, but in neither case can we prove that the discrete model approaches the continuum. So we've used the discrete model as an intuition to understand the continuum. Now we understand the continuum fairly well. We may not know the discrete very well. Now for today, I'm going to talk about SLEA thirds and self-avoiding polygons. And to some extent, this is a complementary talk, I think, to what Svendalen gave earlier, I think, because I wasn't here. But Svendalen discussed ways of putting in measures on self-avoiding paths, on self-avoiding curves, and self-avoiding loops. And he made almost no mention of Loebner theory, Loebner evolution. I want to describe things from a sort of a Loebner evolution perspective. To relate sort of where this goes, what I want to think about very roughly is I want to fix two points, which I'm not sure was done in Svendalen's viewpoint. And I want to look at two measures. I basically want to look at either self-avoiding paths connecting those two points, or self-avoiding loops, self-avoiding polygons that include both points. I can go either direction. And when I talk about a self-avoiding polygon including two points, in some sense, that's the same thing as two self-avoiding walks conditioned so they don't have an intersection themselves. So that's the picture, and we're trying to understand this, and where does this take us? Well, in two dimensions, if we believe conformal invariance, then I could take these two points and send them anywhere. So to start to considering this, let's consider where we send one of these points to infinity and the others at the origin. So we'll start at the origin and look at like this. Actually, maybe actually goes this way. And this is where I sort of want to look at sort of the infinite self-avoiding polygon. Or another way, say, is two-sided self-avoiding walk. Self-avoiding walk. And I could also, that's if I had both of these. Of course, if I only look at one of them, I could also have this model, which would be the one-sided case. Okay. Now, I want to, the audience is mixed. There's some experts in the audience, and there are some people who are not so expert, so I want to sort of talk a little bit to both crowds. So let me start by just giving some background to the self-avoiding walk problem. So now we're going to back up pre-SLE. And just suppose we wanted to model either this thing or that thing. Well, for self-avoiding walk, Even modeling this is a bit subtle, even for defining it. But one thing that's no problem is to talk about the uniform measure on self-avoiding walks on ZD. Well, we'll just stay in Z2, but a lot of I say right now could be more than two dimensions, starting at the origin, but of length n. So these are lattice walks. But if I fix the length of the walk, then there's only a finite number of them, and I can talk about the uniform measure on them. That would be a one-sided thing. I could also do a two-sided version, looking at I can also look at uniform measures of pairs of walks of length n, where the origin is now the middle point I can do either one. Let's make them each n and 2n total. Yeah, in fact, I was about to say that. Right, I can do it either way, let Cn be the number of these guys of length n. Then it's been conjectured for a long time, and I'm going to give a strong version of this conjecture, that the number of walks of length n has the following form. It's asymptotic, and that's, I mean, the ratio goes to 1 of some absolute constant, some number beta to the n, it's called the connective constant, and a correcting form, which has a polynomial form, power form. Not polynomial, because it's not an integer power, but a power law. Now, it's well known and easy to prove that this does have exponential growth in some sense, so the beta is well defined, but this is not known to be the right, proved to be the right correcting thing, and he's saying it's actually asymptotic to a constant is a much stronger thing. But I want to assume this is true today. Just believe that it's true. Now, if instead of looking at this guy, I wanted to look at the number of these guys, well, the number of those guys actually is exactly C2n. Because I could just make that the origin, and then it's just C2n. But it's useful for thinking about this to say that C2n is equal to Cn times Cn times a certain probability of no intersection. So if I want to get something of length 2n, I put something of length n, something of length n. When I put them together, they may or may not produce an intersection. So that just tells me the probability that it doesn't create an intersection. And if I assume this form, then I have, the probability of no intersection, by definition, is C2n over Cn times Cn. And if it is of that form, one ends up with some constant. I think it's 2 to the gamma 1 over that C, 1 over n to the gamma minus 1. I think that's right, but you can check it. So that this correction term, actually, the entire correction term can be interpreted in terms of probability of no intersection of walks. And an important thing from our perspective is that the measure on two-sided walks is just the measure on one-sided walks, on pairs of one-sided walks, condition that they don't produce an intersection. Now, this, I said, is a strong version of this conjecture. I want to make a slightly stronger version of this conjecture. Suppose I have a k-step walk omega. So that's a fixed walk omega, self-avoiding walk. And then I add to that, so this is k-steps, and this is n steps, and I can let Cn of omega be the number of n step walks that start with omega. So think of n as being bigger than k. If n's bigger than k, I can ask how many n step walks begin exactly with k. Then it's conjectured for any starting thing, Cn of omega, should be asymptotic to beta to the n, n to the gamma minus 1, times some constant, but that constant now depends on the initial configuration, omega. So it's some absolute current. That's the one-sided version. I could do the similar thing for the two-sided version. Well, if you can't extend it forever, the constant's zero. Okay, I mean, just your choice. Right. I don't think I said positive constant. And I could do the same thing in the two-sided version, just extending these in n in both directions and going down. I won't bother to write it down. If this strong conjecture holds, then we actually have a measure on infinite self-avoiding walks. So if the strong conjecture holds, implies a measure on infinite walks. And there's really two different measures, one being the one-sided measure and the other being the two-sided measure. And then in some sense, the two-sided measure is still the one-sided, is kind of like the one, two copies of the one-sided measure conditioned not to intersect, except now they're conditioning on a set of measure zero, so they're technical issues. Okay. So, this is one unknown limit, but we're going to assume this limit exists. And the other thing to do is assume, now that if we assume this limit exists, now we assume there's a scaling limit. And I won't worry about right now how you have to scale things. We assume there's some sort of continuum limit, and there's actually two of them, one being a two-sided version, and one being a one-sided version. And what we do is, the goal is to look at what does this, how can we at least describe the continuum of it? I do want to state a little bit, because it's not so well known, especially in the mathematical crowd, how do you, for a mathematician, this makes good sense, this makes good sense, but what happens when you have, when your points are not zero and infinity? What happens when you have a finite number, a finite set of points? I want to talk about a continuum limit here. I'm not going to write down all the details, but here's what you do. Well, you put down a fine lattice. We'll take some sort of limit if the lattice goes to zero. Lattice spacing goes to zero. We look at self-avoiding walks or pairs of self-avoiding walks, depending on whether you're doing the one-sided or two-sided version, connecting the two points. Now, if you look at a self-avoiding walk from here to here, connecting those two points, that's going to be a finite walk. And we don't put a uniform measure on all of them, but we weight these walks by their number of steps. So we put a measure on, for each omega, we put a measure on omega, and the measure on omega, we say mu of omega, that theta right there, we just take beta to the minus, so that theta is this beta, And this absolute value sign just means the number of steps in the walk. And let me put a delta in here, where delta indicates the lattice spacing. Then for exactly this choice of beta, which is the critical beta, the total mass of this, total mass as delta goes to zero behaves like, well, delta to a power. Let me just say a power. Normally, we actually call that power 2a. I'm not going to worry about the sign of the power, but it looks like that. And if, let me just call this point z and this point w, one would expect that times a constant, which depends on z and w. That's the total mass. We can normalize this to make it a probability measure and try to go to the limit. And that's the process we look at. So in the limit, we have sort of uniform measure on pads, except there's something put into the weighting based on the length of the path. And okay. Now, that's the model we're going to look at. But what I don't want to do today is actually try to take these limits. So we just, instead of trying to take the limits, we assume the limit exists. And can we describe limit? And in the case of the one-sided walk, this was done in work which I did with Oded Schramm and Bendel and Werner. And basically, we showed the following. I'm just going to state it. I'm not going to prove this. If the limit exists, assuming the limit is conformally invariant, the distribution must be depending on exactly which model we do, some version of SLE 8/3. Now, I'm trying to take advantage of the fact that I'm late in this conference. I don't have to define SLE. And I hope it's been defined. I just want to state the two main parts of the argument here. One is conformal Markov property. Assuming somebody has discussed SLE here, the conformal Markov property is basically the basic assumption of that Oded Schramm used to define SLE. Something that has to satisfy the conformal Markov property is an SLE. Existence of the limit of conformal invariance gives me this. And there was another property called the restriction property, which is obviously, turned out to be obviously satisfied with the limits of uniform measures, and is something that the limit would have to satisfy. And this is what identifies it as cap equals 8/3. I don't want to discuss this, but there are papers by us. There's also, in terms of discussion of the restriction property and things like that, I'm going to have to do a little self-promotion. But sort of for an introduction to SLE, I now have a book out entitled conformally invariant processes in the plane. And it's published by the American Mathematical Society. And A, you can read about a lot of stuff there too. Also, there's a set of references there if you wish to go to the original papers on lots of these things. Now, there are various versions of SLE, and I just want to, this is more for those who are not experts, to try to show you the pictures as to what radial chordal whole plane correspond to in this case. So we have two things. We have a two-sided picture. And a one-sided picture. Basically, the one-sided case, this thing is given by what's called whole plane SLE 8/3. One-sided whole plane SLE 8/3. Which is really a version of what's called radial SLE. Let me draw this picture here. And this is, so suppose you want to describe this distribution. The way to describe that distribution is to give it dynamics. So suppose I have a little piece of it so far, and I'm interested in the distribution of the remainder. The remainder given this, that's what's called that's radial SLE 8/3. So really, whole plane is just derived as the limit of radial SLE 8/3. Now, radial is normally drawn as if you're starting from the here going in, but that's just gotten by taking this green thing, sending infinity to zero and letting it map like that. So it's just a conformal transformation of that. Now, the easiest SLE is actually chordal SLE in terms of the equations that come out, the arithmetic in the equations. That corresponds to the following. Suppose I'm interested in two-sided case. Well, what I really want to discuss today is two-sided whole plane SLE 8/3. But to describe two-sided whole plane, there's two different ways I could do it. One is to say, suppose I've seen everything up to this point. Suppose I've seen one side, and I'm interested in the other side. Given one side and the other side, that's what's called chordal SLE 8/3. That's the way chordal SLE 8/3 should be considered, at least in this context. It's the distribution of the remainder of the path given the first half of the path. Now, by conformal transformation, this green part is normally mapped there, and then you just look in the upper half plane. That's a conformal transformation. But in one's mind, it's this, at least in my mind. But if you really want to grow up little pieces at a time, you could also imagine doing it this way. Suppose I've given a little piece of the two-sided thing. What's the distribution of the remaining parts? And that's what I'm going to call two-sided radial SLE. And that's the process I just want to write. I'm going to discuss most today is writing down, see how you can write the equations down for that. And in this case as well, I'll note that you can, actually the green's may not be the best color, I'm going to change from green to red. You can map that green path to this, the green path is here, these two points get mapped someplace, and then I have two guys coming in like that. Okay. And basically, the rule is that two-sided radial SLE 8/3 is two independent one-sided SLE 8/3 conditioned not to intersect. And let me say something right now for those who are not familiar with this. At this point I'm saying kappa equals 8/3 is critical, is necessary. The construction I'm going to do is not a construction that works for other kappas. It is not the next thing for other kappas. This is particular to kappa equals 8/3, in particular to the polymer measure. Before giving the construction of this, I just want to list a couple of facts about SLE for people. One is about SLE 8/3. And it's a relationship between chordal and radial. So let me draw a picture. Let me look at a chordal SLE. And right now for this picture, a lot of this talk will be only kappa equals 8/3. The rest of this talk will only be kappa less than or equal to 4. I don't want to get to the non-simply connected, non-simple curve case. Suppose I have chordal SLE, and I take the exponential map. If I just map it like that, I get to here. This is not radial SLE. The distribution of this is not radial SLE. In particular, if this thing, in case of, you know, if this thing went like that, well, I can't get my, I'm not sure which I'm going the right direction or not, but don't worry. That thing would go like that and hit itself. Now, you might ask the question, and the question gets asked by looking at what happened for self-avoiding walks. Suppose I just looked at SLE 8, look at the image of chordal SLE by this map, conditioned so it never intersects. So, image of chordal. Conditioned, never to intersect. And you have to be a little bit careful what that conditioning means, but if this is something that actually can be defined, it's similar to what we're going to do later on. In fact, this does give you radial SLE if kappa is equal to 8/3. This is radial SLE for kappa equals 8/3, but not other values of kappa. There's similar things you can do for other capitalists, but not something as simple as this. There's another fact that I want to put down, which is true for all values of capital. And I actually want to, this is really more for tomorrow's talk, but it's useful for me to put it up today. It's a fact. So suppose we take SLE in a smaller domain. Okay. I'm going to draw the chordal picture. Actually, I already need capital less than or equal to 4 for this picture, but let's think capital less than or equal to 4. Suppose I'm interested in chordal SLE from 0 to infinity in a simply connected domain, which is the upper half plane with something removed. The definition of this, as given by Schramm, is the following. Find a map, which, forget this curve for a second. Find a conformal transformation of the upper half plane to the upper half plane minus this, fixing 0 and infinity. We have a distribution on SLE here. Therefore, it maps to a distribution on curves here, and that is the definition as given by Schramm of SLE in the smaller domain. So SLE in any other domain is just the conformal image. But there's another way of getting this, and it's important to know, and in fact, which should be the definition is unclear, and which is only one's the definition, one's the equivalent version of it, is the following. Suppose I'm interested, I want to define SLE in a smaller domain. So, let's look at the map G sub T, just the standard map that we all know and love in SLE. So, this GT only depends on that curve up to this time T. And this has gone down someplace. This is what's often called U sub T. And so we have the standard VT GT of Z equals 2 over GT of Z minus square root of kappa of VT. I like to say minus UT. That's just the Lorentz equation. The way that I can get this, instead of mapping over there, what I can do is I can say, just take a solution to the Lerner equation, but don't make this Brownian motion. Give this Brownian motion a drift that keeps it away from this guy. So let me draw over here. So what I've gotten here, this is the map that brings, this is the map that brings that down to there. And I'm going to call this V sub T. It depends on T. And then I'll just write it down. There's an equation for this. If I let dUT equal, I'll tell you what D is in a second. B log CT prime of UT prime DT minus DBT. So this is a standard Brownian motion. D is, well, I'm going to use this tomorrow, maybe even today. I'm going to often use A for 2 over kappa. But this is the same thing as 6 minus kappa over 2 kappa. It's a constant having to do with the... If I let UT satisfy this, then this curve that you get using the usual Loebner equation with this input is exactly what you would exactly be Brownian motion, would exactly be SLE in the smaller domain. Psi is phi. And this is an exercise in conformal transformations of Loebner things. But basically, if you define this thing, you just work out what it is. What I've done at the end to make this nicer is I've changed the time so the time scale works nicer for this process than for the original process. If I map from here to here and use the time scale over here, it isn't quite as nice after I map it over there. So I've changed the time. So up to change of parameterization, we get this nice little formula. Without giving you the formula, I will tell you there is a similar formula for radial SLE. If I want to get radial SLE in a smaller domain, I can use the radial equation in the larger domain and have some sort of drift term depending on what's happening on the Brownian motion. It's just absolutely ridiculous. By the way, for the up here, kappa equals 6 is when B is equal to 0. So for kappa equals 6, the image of chordal SLE actually is radial SLE until you run into some problems with the fact that it hits itself and stuff. But at least until it hits itself, there's no problem. It's because I'm just going to use, I'm going to use the parameter A later. And because I remembered off the top of my head 3A minus 1 over 2, so actually I calculated 6 minus kappa over 2 kappa in my head while I was doing that. There's no reason except that I happen to like to use A rather than kappa personally, just because I hate things in denominators. Okay. Okay. Yes, up to time reparameterization. And the time parameterization of SLE is an arbitrary thing. So basically, locally, if you're in the smaller domain, locally, you're absolutely continuous with respect to the larger domain with some sort of drift term keeping you away from there. Well, for small kappa, a drift term keeping you away from there. Actually, the nature of the sign depends on kappa. I'm thinking small kappas in my mind. There's a similar thing for radial. I don't want to put it up, but I wanted to mention this because there is a fact that we use in this construction, and I just sort of, and it's the following thing. Suppose I take a curve, just take a fixed deterministic curve, simple curve, starting at from here going to zero. I think it was going from here to there. Now, one thing I can do is take chordal SLE from this point to that point. Another thing that I can do is stop this curve before it gets all the way there. And take radial SLE from this point to that point. Now, the experts have known, I'm not sure how precisely it's been given, that as this point goes to there, the limit of the radial path is the chordal path. And that statement can be justified with estimates on how close they are using these comments, things like this. So you want to justify the fact that the limit of radial SLE is chordal SLE with estimates. In other words, for instance, you could say if you're looking at here, the distribution right there, up to say when it reaches 1/2, or a conformal radius 1/2, and I say, take the limit of this as we approach there. If you tell me what this radius is, I can tell you how close the radial and chordal measures are on that thing right there. I don't actually want to put that down. I just want to, things that can be done. So, given all that, let me tell you how to define, well, how to construct two-sided radial SLE in the SLE 8/3 using this intuition. And what we're going to do I want to define paths. So that's the thing I want to define. Right, if it's a simple exercise, if I took two independent radial SLEs with probability 1, they would intersect. So I can't do that. But I just do the following thing. First thing I'm going to do is what I want to do is define this distribution, but what I'll first do is define the marginal on this. So I wanted to find the distribution on both of these. So I first define the marginal on that. And then, given this, define the measure, the conditional measure on that. And those people taking notes in one color pen probably hate it that I've just done that. But you'll have to find a way of writing it. And actually, I can tell you what the answer is in the second half. In fact, I've already told you in some sense. It's just chordal SLE. But the justification will use this fact over here. Now, to define the marginal, I first consider the following question. Let me call this path gamma 1 and this path gamma 2, just to give it a name. What I need to consider is the probability that gamma 1, 0, t intersect gamma 2, 0, infinity. Gamma 1, 0, infinity intersects gamma 2, 0, infinity for sure, but I'll just look at the limit of that. How does that behave as t goes to infinity. As t goes to infinity, the red path keeps going. For SLE 8/3, this is actually a now standard SLE type calculation. And it uses the, it's called the restriction property for radial SLE. But let me just put down what the formula is. The probability of avoiding that, well, the probability of, g sub t is mapping this, gets rid of the red. So g sub t is the map with g of 0 equals 0, gt prime of 0 equals e to the t. It gets rid of the red. Then what's called the restriction property for radial SLE says that given the red, the probability that the white avoids the red is gt prime of, let me call this point z just to give it a starting point, that raised to the 5/8 times gt prime of 0 raised to the 5/48. By the way, this is the radial restriction property for SLE 8/3. Let me just say, this is one of the many things that was done in collaboration with Fendelin and Oded. However, in all our papers, this never appeared in any of our papers. So it appears in my book, but it's certainly part of our joint collaboration. We just never got around to that paper. So, I mean, for each red path, it's this, and then you take the expected value of that. It gives you the average over everything. Okay. By the way, this is deterministic. So it's really only the expectation over one thing, and it's the expectation over a derivative of a map. And, well, SLE can do these things. I'm just going to leave you on that there. And so, one actually shows, let me call this point W, give this a starting point. One actually can prove that this is asymptotic to some constant, which depends on the starting point W and Z, or just the difference actually between them. And E to the minus an exponent t over 24. A side comment for those who know these things, for those who know that gamma should be 43 over 32, gamma minus 1 is 11 over 32, and 11 over 24 is 4/3 times 11 over 32, which is 1 over, this is just for experts. So this exponent is intimately related with this exponent. There's just some algebra that, this is the gamma I had early on the self-avoiding walk. And this constant even can be determined. It's basically W minus Z to the 3/4 power, times some absolute constant that I don't care about. So it's W minus Z to the 3/4 is correct. So now, without doing anything resembling any details at all, let me just go through, just discuss what the techniques are. Is now, well, now we establish an appropriate martingale, give an appropriate martingale. As you continue this path, you get an appropriate martingale as you go along. Given the martingale, once you've gotten the martingale, if you assume the martingale, you use Drusano transformation. To tell you to actually give equations. And I'm going to give you what the equations are. Now I'm going to apologize because I had these equations in a slightly different parameterization. So So instead of parameterizing it by e to the t, I have things parameterized by e to the 3t over 8. Because it makes some things nicer. So here's the picture. So this was W and this was Z. Let me also call W e to the I U0. Z is e to the I V0. I'm calling this point e to the I UT. E to the I VT. Yeah. Yes. In fact, assuming I get to it, and I can just barely get to it, I think I'm actually going to take a form. I'm going to put one formula up that actually puts sub W and D together. So I'll actually bring them together in about 5 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's an exact formula. It's exact. I mean, it's not CWZ is exactly equal to C some absolute constant W minus E to the 3/4. So it's about, you know, you can let W go to Z. Now, GT satisfies the usual radial Lerner equation. I never write the radial Lerner, I rarely write the radial Lerner equation in its usual form these days. I almost always write it in its logarithm form. So I write GT of Z as e to the I HT of Z. Then the radial equation, this is just the usual radial Lerner equation in logarithm form. But I'm putting a 3/8, the 3/8 test for those is this 3/8 here. It happens to be in this particular, if I parameterize it like this, I have to do it like this. And then finally what I have to do is tell you the, how these UT and VT move, then DUT is 3/8 cotan ut minus vt over 2 plus dvt. Vt is moving. I mean, Vt actually moves just according to the Leibniz equation. And it should be, that got reversed. So if I wanted to find the process, I could actually have just started by saying, let Ut and Vt satisfy this and solve the Leibniz equation. But the reason to go, I want to show where this comes from, this intuition of just taking two SLEs, two independent SLE S 8/3 and conditioning them not to intersect. Now, I've only got a few minutes left. I want to make a couple of comments about this. One is, I've given you a very non-symmetric definition. I've said how this operates and that operates. And what I've done is basically grow this path entirely and then grow this path. Another thing you might want to do is grow a little bit of this, then a little bit of this, then a little bit of that, and a little bit of that. Or you might want to grow them simultaneously. And you can ask the question whether you can do this, and the answer is yes. And this is an example of commutation. And the growing of multiple SLEs is a very tricky thing, and we'll hear more about that later. It is least tricky in the case of two SLE 8/3. Two SLE 8/3 is, so since I had the first talk, I get to the easiest case. This is the easiest case of multiple SLEs I know of, is exactly two SLE 8/3. And it can be justified in a number of ways. But one basically is that you're defining this, you derive this from a symmetric type relation to begin with. Another comment, which I could have just used these equations for, whoops, I shouldn't have erased here, but imagine these equations. These equations, I can use the picture here, since Bertrand asked this question, what happens if W and V start very close to each other, or even together, if U0 equals V0? If U0 equals V0, there's no problem whatsoever with these equations. You kind of have to decide whether, which way, does V0 go this way from U0 or that way from U0? But once you make that decision, it's okay. They'll actually never come back and hit each other, but they can start together. So there's no problem if we can have our two-sided radial SLE starting from the same point. That's perfectly legal. I mean, it's like a Bessel process. If I do a, if I say it's a, I haven't thought about it that way. I mean, basically, I'm just thinking. I mean, I think it in a rather silly elementary way. If I start with U0, V0 can go this way or that way. V can go this way or that way. And if you take the limit as you go. It's just one of these, a standard two-sided question. It can start either way. I don't have much time. I do want to give the restriction formula for this problem. For two-sided radial SLE. 8/3. And so here's the question. What is the probability, starting at U and V, that two-sided radial SLE 8/3 avoids a set, let me call the set A. And here I'm choosing an A such that the disk minus A is simply connected and the origin is not an A. So let C, which is CA, be the map that takes the disk minus A to the disk, sending the origin to the origin. So C of 0 is 0, and for ease, C prime of 0 is bigger than 0. Then my two points get sent someplace. Like that. And then there's an exact formula for this probability, and I'll just give it to you. It's C prime of U to the 5/8, C prime of B to the 5/8. By the way, that's the same 5/8 we saw over here. The 5/48 disappears. We get something different at the origin. What we actually get is 2/3. And then we get one other correction. And this correction is to the 3/4 power. And I'm sorry to go a little bit over time, because I want to just at least emphasize where these exponents are. I just want to show you the important exponents. So this is the boundary scaling exponent for SLE 8/3. This is the one-sided interior or bulk scaling exponent, the one-sided exponent. This is the two-sided interior scaling exponent. Now I'll leave, I give easier homework. So here's your homework. 2/3 equals 1 minus 4/3. Or 4/3 equals 1 minus 2, whoops. Sorry about that. 2/3 equals 2 minus 4/3. I should do my homework exercises before walking in. Or 4/3 equals 2 minus 2/3. This scaling exponent is actually the two disconnection exponent for Brownian motion, and this is the boundary of a Brownian motion, or an SLE. Okay. The other thing I want to do with this formula is, since it's been asked, is let U tend to V. As U tends to V, these agree, and that also tends to C prime at that point. And 5/8 plus 5/8 plus 3/4, I hope, is 2. So if we get 2, and let me just draw a picture for that last interpretation. There's U. That's what my two-sided thing looks like. This is the boundary scaling exponent for two independent Brownian motions, or two independent excursions. So in fact, this process is actually the same thing as if I took two independent excursions and then looked at the outer boundary. And let me see that before. Okay, I'm already over time, so maybe I should stop here.